So good morning, church. Good to be with you this morning. What I'm going to be talking about this morning is something that I work through as well. It's something that I think about and I see and I check. So please don't get me wrong. This is not a finger pointing exercise. I'm not here to lay anything heavy on you guys that isn't right. Because the fingers point at me as well. So over the last 6 weeks, I think it is, I've been asked to speak twice, and it hasn't worked out, either with the twins not arriving as we thought they would, or different circumstances have happened. And I've gone through a number of topics, things that I thought I'd talk to you about. The first one was worship, because it was in line with what Joel was bringing anyway, talking to us about worship at the moment. And then I looked at the attributes of God, and that was a great little exercise for me to do, a bit of homework for me to do myself. But all the way through, I just didn't feel it was relevant. And it came back to the same thing that God speaks to me about over and over. Now, we've just had Easter, and we've had our minds focused on Easter and all that brings with it, and all those things that come with Easter. And so I wanted us to just look back on Easter. And so I want to talk this morning about chocolate. The chocolate metaphor actually works quite well when you combine it with Christianity. Just a bit of a fun fact. My boys say to me, "Daddy, fun fact." Oh yeah, this is going to be good. 6 people died in a crane crash. There was a penny left on the line. That's not a fun fact. You know, we have the. Some of you probably already know. It's news to me. We have the Aztecs to thank for it. I guess it's because you guys are so close to Mexico. You all know about the Aztecs. They brought about chocolate. And it was so precious, you know, they traded the cocoa beans as currency. They believed the one who gave them the cocoa bean was their god of wisdom. Close, but no turkey dinner. Or is it chicken dinner? Sorry. It made its way over to Europe, and as usual, it started with the aristocracy, didn't it? And then it made its way down to the common people. But I'm sure what the common people ate wasn't quite chocolate, was it? It just looked like it. In the US, the government thought it was so essential for their soldiers, they supplied it to them during the war. It's a little bizarre, I think, because they they supplied them chocolate, and I would have kind of like encouraged them to pray more. But governments being governments. Chocolate in Britain is really quite strongly linked to Christianity. Two of the biggest chocolate makers in the country, the Rowntree family and the Cadbury family, they were all Quakers. And they established themselves as chocolatiers, but they established themselves on Christian principles as well. The Cadbury family, if you were to, you can zoom down, have a look, Google it, Bourneville is the area where the Cadbury factory is. But all around there's all green parks, and it's really a lovely area. And people now even want to live in that area because their houses are so lovely that they supply to their workers. Christian principles. Good chocolate. The families themselves, they supplied libraries, free education, social welfare officers, doctors, dentists, and a pension fund. And if you go around Bourneville, and I was surprised when I first moved to that area, or near that area, if you go around there, you'll see there's no pubs there in and around Bourneville. They're all on the outskirts. John Cadbury himself, he said that alcohol was the main cause of poverty, and he hoped that his product would serve as an alternative. Didn't quite catch on that strong, did it? In the NIV, it says, Jesus said, "I've come that they may have life and have it to the full." I remember a time when that verse really didn't mean a great deal to me because I saw life, even as a Christian, I'm sorry, that I didn't want any much more of this because it was getting quite unbearable. So when Jesus says, "I've come that they might have life and have it to the full," I was like going, steady on, no, I'd rather not if you don't mind. I think, if you don't mind, Lord, I think it would have been better off he'd have said, "I have come that they might have chocolate." Because then I'd have gone with that. I think the Message Bible really sums it up quite nicely. And in the it says, I came that they might have real and eternal life, more and better than they ever dreamed of. And that's what we signed up for, isn't it? That's when we became Christians. That's why we put our hands up, you know, when every head was bowed. That's what we went for, wasn't it? More and better life. Because we knew that what this world offers us, it looks like chocolate, doesn't it? From a distance. And it's been marketed that way. And it's so ingrained in people that we want to believe that it is chocolate. And even while we're eating it, we know it doesn't satisfy. We know it doesn't cut it. But oftentimes we didn't know there was an alternative. You know what I mean by the chocolate of the world? It's this wealth, the new car, the bigger house, become a celebrity. Get a million subscribers on YouTube, or even just 100 likes on my post wouldn't be bad. It's kind of like the emperor's new clothes, isn't it? That's how far back it's been going, this falsehood of what the world offers us. The story of the emperor and his new clothes, it was the same thing. He'd hypnotized himself so much to believe the lie that he was wearing this unique set of clothes. But all the time, it took a kid to expose it. And I'm sure the other people around him thought, thank goodness for that, we don't have to keep up this pretense anymore. When I was 11 years old, my father died in a car crash. Before he died, though, he left money in a trust for me that I was to inherit when I was 18. And at 18, there it was. And the equivalent of what it is today was somewhere near $55,000. Now, $55,000 to an 18-year-old who's had no parental guidance, no father figure for the last 7 years, and no real guidance either all the way through. My mum is a lovely lady, don't get me wrong, but she was busy with four kids and dealing with all those things. But there's this lad, 18 years old, with 55 grand. It doesn't take much of an imagination to know what happened to it. At that time in Britain as well, it was in the 80s, there was an unemployment rate of 12%. Lots of unemployment. So somebody wandering around with a wad of cash in their pocket, they attract a lot of friends. And I had lots of friends. But within 9 months, you can imagine it just went. 9 months down the line, it was gone. I had a beautiful girlfriend at that time as well. But 9 months later, she was gone too. And all the way through that, I remember, no matter what I spent it on, no matter the meals that I went to, the hotels I stayed in, the holidays that I went on, the things that I bought with it, it just never satisfied. I was eating this stuff, and it just never filled that void. John Cougar Mellencamp, he sings a song, and Sam will roll his eyes, because whenever I talk about this subject, I always talk about John Cougar Mellencamp in this song. He's a secular singer, you know it. There's a void in my heart I can't seem to fill. I do charity work when I believe in the cause, but my soul, it bothers me still. Say, Lord, you made me like I am. Can you heal this emptiness? Will there be a void in my heart when they carry me out to rest? He wasn't English, by the way. But that sums it up, doesn't it? There's this void within us. There's this emptiness that we think the world can fill, but it doesn't. St. Augustine, he was talking to God and he said, you've made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. So we know the world. We can see that what the world offers us. We see all the failings, all the things that it gets wrong. And we cried out to God, didn't we? There was that time when we put up our hand, and we cried out to God, and we asked him, save me. Take me out of this situation. I don't like this anymore. I don't want to live this way. I can see there's a truth in you. And we turned to God. And that happened to me on the 1st of April, 1985, just about the time when Ivy was giving birth to Russ there. And Jesus, in his grace, he came and he satisfied that longing within me. That void was filled. And what that void was, it's that rich chocolate, isn't it? It's that chocolate's just the real stuff. I don't mean to upset anybody here, but it wasn't Hershey's. It's extravagant, isn't it? And it's fulfilling, it's satisfying, and it's pure chocolate. nothing else added into it. There's a verse as well in Psalm 34. Sorry, David, but it says, King David, that is. He said, "Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that takes refuge in him." Again, I'll have a word with him when I get there, but I don't think David quite covered it. Because it says, "Taste and see." And it's just like a, "Oh, yeah, right." That's not what it's about. The message says, and I'll thank Eugene again, he says, "Open your mouth and taste. Open your eyes and see how good God is. Blessed are you when you run to him." That's more like it, isn't it? Just a mouthful of it. Like we've enjoyed at Easter time. Lots of the stuff. And we jumped in. We said, "Yes, Lord, get me out of this. Get me out of this situation. Get me out of the world's ways. Get me out of the way that I'm living. I don't like this anymore, and I want more of you." We do this, and we've done this, but why is it that we look back at what the world offers? Why is it we look back at the world's chocolate and think that's the way it's going to go? Because it's not chocolate. It's poo. I did want to phrase it another way, but Noah said, "No, that's not right, Daddy. You can't say that in church." You know, through the years, I've read the Bible cover to cover a few times, and it's a really good exercise to do. You get this huge picture of man's relationship with God. And every time I come to, Chronicles, and you read in there, you know, Kings, Chronicles, around there, and you're reading through it, and you see this pattern emerging, don't you? You see the kings of Israel, the kings of Judah, and that everything is good, and it's going well. The king's got his heart focused on God. Things are going really well, and there kind of becomes this kind of complacency, and people just drift away then, and they slide away from God. And then things go bad, and the king turns away from God, and they erect these Asherah poles, and they make these own deities for themselves. And then it goes bad, and then what happens? Same as we do. You cry out to God. God in his mercy says, come on, I'll lead you on. They get another good king, things go really well for them, and it's this cycle that you see all the way through it. In 2 Kings 17, it says, as the Israelites were, or is it Judah, was taken off into exile into Babylon. The exile came about because of sin. The children of Israel sinned against God, their God, who had delivered them from Egypt and the brutal oppression of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. They took up with other gods, fell in with the ways and the life of the pagan nations God had chased off, and went along with whatever their kings did. They did all kinds of things on the sly, things offensive to their God, then openly and shamelessly built local sects and religion shrines at every available site. They set up their sects and religion symbols at practically every crossroads. Everywhere you look, there was smoke from pagan offerings to their deities, the identical offerings that had gotten the pagan nations off into exile. They had accumulated a long list of evil actions, and God was fed up with their persistent worship of gods carved out of dead wood or shaped out of clay, even though God had plainly said, "Don't do this ever." God had taken a stand against Israel and Judah, speaking clearly through countless holy prophets and seers, time and time again. "Turn away from your evil way of life. Do what I tell you and have been telling you in the revelation I gave your ancestors, and of which I keep reminding you through my servant, the prophets." But they wouldn't listen. If anything, they were even more bullheaded than their stubborn ancestors, if that's possible. They were contemptuous of this instruction. The solemn and holy covenant he had made with their ancestors, and of his repeated reminders and warnings, they lived a nothing life and became nothings, just like the pagan people around them. They were well warned. God said, "Don't." But they did it anyway. Those Israelites, they had everything going for them, didn't they? They had God. They had beautiful surroundings. All they had to do was just ignore the ways of the people around them. Not look for satisfaction in other things. Why do we think there's satisfaction in other things? Didn't we reach a point where we turned What is it? We don't believe God anymore? Is it because we can't see God anymore? Is it because he's not tangible anymore? There's a famous quote. Every man who knocks on a brothel door is looking for God. There's a British comedian, Russell Brand, and he says, crack houses and these dens of suffering and illicit activity, they're all people trying to feel good, trying to feel connected. People are trying to escape. People are trying to get out of their own heads. And a lot of the time, they're trying to get off their heads. And this is at the core, isn't it, of why the message of Jesus is so important to people today, so important to us today. Because metaphorically, and often sometimes not, people are knocking on a brothel door. We're all looking for fulfillment in things that will only leave us empty. And because instant, sometimes gratifying things are at our fingertips, Netflix, Insta, face of chat, porn, YouTube, other modern trappings, we've become addicted. But these things have us addicted, they're addicted to nothing, isn't it? That's what we're addicted to. You know, when you open up Facebook, sorry boys, kids, Instagram, you've got this anticipation, haven't you, that there's going to be something that's, you know, chocolatey. But then after a while, after you've been flicking for a while and watching so many videos, and after a bit, you kind of like, you get this feeling that you've just consumed, you know, something that's not chocolatey. It's same with all these other diversions and these addictions. They just leave us feeling empty. There's a Christian teacher called David Reed, and he said, if we invest our lives in the nothingness of what this world has to offer, we not only reap a harvest of nothing, but we destroy our lives as well. It's what we're eating, isn't it? Excuse me, but you eat poo, you're not going to be very well, are you? Not if you continue to do it. This is what he's saying. We not only reap a harvest of nothing, but we destroy our lives in it as well. Many Christians, he said, have lives that are disordered, chaotic, shattered because of their investment in the wind of this world. And that explains it perfectly, doesn't it? Our time in fruitless pursuits, our money on unnecessary stuff, our attention on meaningless, it's wind. It just wafts us here and there. There's nothing lasting is achieved. Because we've started to believe that what this world is offering us is chocolate, we've turned around and gone, you know what? I don't, but hey, look. But it's not, is it? It's just wind. So before you decide, maybe today or tomorrow, before you make that decision, just think to yourself, what do I want written into my story? Ask yourself, what's my next chapter of my life going to look like? What do I want it to be? Do I want it to be trust or just mistrust? Do I want selflessness or just selfishness? Do I want love or do I want resentment? Is it maturity or immaturity that I want to aim for? Do I want redemption or do I want sin? Do I want life, good life? Or do I want death? It says the wages of sin is death. It's death of a relationship, isn't it? It's death of dreams, death of purpose. You can see the chaos that it causes when you indulge in those that non-chocolate of the world. You can see that what happens, the disruption that occurs around us when we choose those things. So after choosing Christ, we can't just glibly live that way, can we? We can't live thoughtlessly. In Peter it said, Peter 5:8, it said, be alert and sober mind. Your enemy the devil prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. In John 10:10, beginning there, it says, the devil comes only to kill, steal, and destroy. That's what's offered to us. That's not what we want to choose. So since we're out from under the old tyranny, does that mean that we can live an old way we want? Any old way. Since we're free in the freedom of God, can we do anything that comes to mind? Hardly. You know well enough from your own experiences that there are some acts of so-called freedom that destroy freedom. Offer yourself to sin, for instance, and it's your last free act. But offer yourself to the way of God, and the freedom never quits. All our lives we've let sin tell us what to do. But thank God, you can start listening to a new master, one whose commands set you free to live openly in his freedom. I'm using this freedom language because it's easy to picture. You can readily recall, can't you, how at one time, the more you did just what you wanted and felt like doing, not caring about others, not caring about God, the worse your life became and the less freedom you had. And how much different is it now? As you live in God's freedom, your life's healed and expansive in holiness, what they can be. As long as you did what you felt like doing, ignoring God, you didn't have to bother with right thinking or right living or right anything for that matter. But you call that free life. What did you get out of it? Nothing you're proud of now. Where did it get you? A dead end. But now that you've found that you don't have to listen to sin tell you what to do, and have discovered the delight of listening to the God telling you what to do, our God, what a surprise. And you know this one. A whole, healed, put together life right now, with more and more life on the way. Work hard for sin your whole life, your pension is death. But God's gift is real life, eternal life, delivered through Jesus. That was the message version of Romans 6. And in verse 22, it says, a whole, healed, put together life, right now, with more and more life on the way. Doesn't that sound like a decent bar of chocolate? And more. It's rich, isn't it? It's full, it's satisfying, it's joy filled. Now, it's not easy, I grant you. It's not the laid-back Michelangelo Sistine Chapel thing, just laying back, is it? And at times it is striving, at times it is stretching, and at times it calls us to be bigger than we are, bigger than we our own insecurities tell us we are. But that's small living, and that's not what we should be settling for. Because we're writing a story about ourselves here. We make choices that fill in those blanks that haven't been written yet. Jeremiah 29, verse 13, he says, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Eugene Peterson translated it, and he said, when you look for me, you'll find me. Yes, when you get serious about finding me and want it more than anything, I'll make sure you won't be disappointed. God's decree. So I'll finish with what I have to say. So when you come to that next decision point, like I said, today, tomorrow, wherever it is, and you're offered poo, ask yourself the question, what do I want written in my story? How do I want it to look? What's the next chapter going to be? What this world offers us is not chocolate, and it does not satisfy. So make the choice, make the good choice, to turn our hearts over to God, eh? Don't mind, I'll pray for us. Father, thank you for what you offer us. Thank you for the life that we can have in you, the full, expansive life, more and better life. Father, I pray for my brothers and sisters here today. I pray that in every moment that they choose, they will choose you. They will see your goodness. They will feel and sense your presence. I ask it in Jesus' name.